On the next episode of the Business Samurai Podcast, I'm pleased to bring on Brendan Kumarasamy. Brendan is a communications and public speaking coach and YouTuber. He helps high-level executives perfect their public speaking tenor and has appeared on well over 400 podcasts. On this episode, we break down what it takes to become an effective communicator, how to improve your communications. Brendan dives into some specific tips and tactics that you can implement in your daily life to practice your communication skills and be a more effective communicator and sound more polished. So sit back as I discuss with Brendan how to be an effective communicator here on the Business Samurai Podcast.
Do you enjoy talking business? Do you enjoy reading about business? Do you geek out over the entrepreneurial journey? If so, then you are in the right spot. The Business Samurai Podcast brings you the stories told by the people themselves. You'll be immersed in a wide variety of industries, from venture capital to gourmet popcorn, learning how to be a better leader, or the personalities behind solving the broadband crisis. At the Business Samurai, we believe it takes a wide variety of skill sets and experiences to be successful in business and life. Our aim is to not only entertain, but educate, for you to recognize how successful tactics and motivations in one industry can help propel you forward in your own unique business. Sit back, enjoy, and welcome to the Business Samurai Podcast. I am your host, John Barker.
So, Brendan, to start out the conversation, I had a whole bunch of listed questions and things of this that are very serious. But you know what? I said, forget the serious. You've done over 400 podcasts. I don't know how much new unearthing of things that I may get. But I wanted to start out with something that was fun and poking fun at myself. Why the hell do I not like listening to the sound of my own voice if I'm reviewing or editing podcasts or other video and just trying to get better? I despise it. I absolutely despise doing it after umpteen million times. What's the deal with that?
You know, I've wondered the same thing when I started recording myself speak, John, probably like 7 years ago. And I just find that we're always our hardest critic. We always criticize our own voice more than other people. That's why it's so important to have accountability. It's important for somebody else to go, yeah, John, by the way, you have a really nice voice, versus you going, I have a really nice voice. So I don't think there's like a way around it. I've just found over time, I actually call this the gag test, more on video than audio, John, in the sense that if you can watch yourself speak for longer than 20 minutes without barfing, you're probably a good speaker, which is the case with you, by the way. So there you go.
No, well, I appreciate that. We'll put that to the test. I'll put that to the test later on when I go edit. But jumping into, at what point did you realize or get into, I needed to improve my communication, I need to get in public speaking, and I knew that, you know, in speaking for you now, that you would propel yourself further in your career because of that?
Yeah, honestly, man, it wasn't as intentional as I preach to my clients now. What happened essentially was when I was in university, I went to business school. My goal was to become a management consultant. I wasn't looking to be a coach or an entrepreneur or start a YouTube channel. I wanted to work at McKinsey or IBM and just have a nice high-paying job and be successful. Because my parents were factory workers, so I saw education as my way out. That's why I started doing these case competitions, which are essentially presentations for nerds, like professional sports for nerds, rather. So while other guys my age are playing like rugby or basketball or baseball, I'm not into that stuff. So I did presentations competitively. That's how I learned how to speak. So it wasn't like I was sitting there and saying, huh, you know, if I worked on my communication skills, I could propel my career. No, it was more about I'm just cutthroat competitive and I wanted to win these competitions and I was losing them. And I was noticing that the best teams were just really good at communication. So I said I need to get better at this. But then I later found out that it's an amplifier of everything.
You said those were called case presentations?
Case competitions. You got it.
I've never heard of that before. What do you? Is that like a regional thing? Is that a? Where do you go find that out? The only thing I'm familiar when it comes to getting better at communicating and public speaking in general is Toastmasters. That is the only organization. I think that's what everybody goes to is default. Where do you go find more about the case presentations?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, that's normal that you don't know much about it, John. It's a very, very small community. So it's okay. Really only for business students in college and university who are either doing their bachelor's in business school or their MBA in business school. That's the only community that even knows remotely what a case competition is. But essentially what it is think of it like talent scouting for sports. So let's take a popular sport like basketball. So what happens in the NBA? Talent scouts across all of the franchise teams. They go out to high schools. They go out to colleges to see where the best students in the country, the best players, and then they draft them to the NBA. They keep an eye on them, right? Think of the same thing, but for the business world. So Walmart, that was a case sponsor probably 7 years ago when I was at the peak of my case competition career, they would come, like literally, not their store managers, the senior vice president of Walmart Canada would come on a weekend and they would spend like $30,000, $50,000, like just them, to sponsor this whole thing, to watch 20-year-olds solve problems in their company. But the objective isn't really to hear the solutions, even if some of them are pretty good. Is really to see who's really strong. So let's say the SVP is sitting there and these 20-year-old kids are presenting, because who the hell does this for fun, right? So let's say there's like 8,000 students in my faculty. Only 80 people were in this program. So most of my friends went on to get like 3 job offers out of school. So what happens is the SVP, John, goes, you give them automatic job offers so that nobody else picks them up. That's the strategy.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I've never heard that. And that seems like a good way at an early age to kind of one of the critical skill sets to success and jump right into that. That's obviously, I'm an old hat, and just by the no hair thing, you can tell that's definitely not anything that I was familiar with or heard of. So how important for people that, if that doesn't exist, do you put on something like Toastmasters or other things to start building a community to start getting better at the skill set? 100%. Because I have a story about I've got my own little take on Toastmasters. We'll get into that because I went to one meeting, but go for it.
For sure, man. I'd love to hear it. Here's my personal opinion. I love Toastmasters. I'm a fan. And I'll tell you why. Because it's the only accountability system in the world for communication that's very cheap. So someone who can't afford a coach, which will run you thousands of dollars, by the way, to hire somebody like me as an example, right? If you're getting started in your career, you're fresh out of university or college, you're just getting to start off to pay off your student debt, you're new to your business, you're like year one, I think Toastmasters is a great start because it's better than doing nothing. But what I would say is supplement professional tips, as an example we shared today from my YouTube channel, use that free content, supplement your learning. But there's a but, and the but becomes when your time becomes more valuable than your money. So what does that mean? Eventually in your career, as you progress, let's say to Toastmasters, and more specifically in the corporate ladder of your business, let's say you're doing more than 100,000 either in your business or your career, what starts to happen now, John, is your time becomes way more valuable because your hourly rate goes up. So now at that point, I have different advice, which is don't waste your time in Toastmasters because it'll take you months, years to get better. And the best communicators in a Toastmasters club will never stay in a club. And the feedback is very overly positive. Whereas when you hire a coach, let's say somebody like me as an example, I'm a lot more hardcore. So if you're spending a few thousand, it's like, no, we need to get results in 3 weeks or I'll fire you. So it's a lot more intense, but you get the result a lot faster, so you're not wasting time.
Gotcha. And that definitely makes sense on the time thing. The thing that got me when I went to one Toastmasters meeting, it was, you know, local. There wasn't that many people there. But as I started digging into it, we did the table talk drill, which is very similar to yours, throw out a keyword and go talk. And my first one, I jumped up there, I did it as well, because whoever was supposed to present, they weren't. When I said, okay, this was kind of cool, let me look into it some more before I like committed to them, it was the situation of they were very focused on having you memorize presentations, and they were very much different ones going on. It wasn't like you were building your talk and you were getting better at your talk. It was like, you're going to do this topic, you got to memorize it in a week or two, then you're going to switch, and then you're going to switch. And I went, hold on a second, I don't have time, going back to your time point, to start memorizing all these different kind of speeches. I want to like get a good one going. And that was the thing that kind of brought me back down and said, all right, this was cool, but not cool enough for me to want to be in memorization. This isn't a TEDx talk. They're the only group I know that actually make you memorize your speeches.
I love that experience. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Toastmaster definitely has its flaws, John. But I would say in general, if you're someone who's getting started, it makes sense. But if you get to a point in your career where you just have a good amount of money, I would just say hire somebody, save time.
No, definitely makes sense. So, getting into the fear of this, because this obviously ranks up there as a major fear with public speaking. But with everybody and their brother doing TikTok dancing, ranting and raving on Instagram videos, and all this kind of stuff. Oh, okay, you. What? Why is everybody that does all that? If you said, hey, why don't you go give a 15 or 20 minute talk in front of the company or go present at this thing, all of a sudden go, I can't do that, even though they're shaking their butt on TikTok. I mean, I feel like there's a disconnect there. So what's the fear of public speaking?
Here's what I would say, John. The reason we're scared of communication is actually really simple if you think about it. Where do we learn how to speak? The answer is the education system. Regardless of where you're from, regardless of where you live, elementary school and high school is where you learn how to speak. That's where you give your first official presentations. But here's the problem with these official presentations. Threefold. Number one, all of them are mandatory. We don't wake up one morning and say, hey, John, you want to get breakfast and present all day? Says nobody ever. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is all of the presentations are different, John. They're different. So it's never, what are you passionate about? Are you passionate about business? Are you passionate about management consulting? Are you passionate about business? No, you got to talk about Shakespearean poetry. You got to talk about all of these random things. So it's not really exciting for the kids. Number three, the worst one. Every presentation, John, is tied to a punishment. So if you don't do a great job, you don't get a clap. You get a slap in the head. So you grow up believing that communication is a chore and nobody wants to get better at the dishes. Nobody wants to get better at doing the dishes, so naturally no one wants to do that more. Whereas with TikTok, the reason why people like it is because our frame of reference is different. We don't see it as a way to grow our careers. It's just fun. So because our frame of reference equals fun, we do it more. That's why there's a difference there.
Do you think there is also something with standing in front of a group that you're getting kind of that real-time feedback and you can see the expression on their faces versus just posting a video online and walking away and going back, oh, hey, people like this, or some random bozo put a trolling comment on my thing. Do you think that comes into play a little bit as well?
Definitely, definitely.
So talking about building the presentations, I've had the experience of putting some people to sleep because I was not in the right audience when I showed up somewhere and I was asked to give a presentation on some cybersecurity stuff. But what's the best way that you found to structure whatever you're presenting to make it engaging?
For sure. So here's what I would say. I was like, simplicity for me is always important. So before we can get into content structure, let's talk about how you should practice it in what order. So for me, communication, John, at the end of the day, is like jigsaw puzzles. You know those puzzles we used to do as kids? Mm-hmm. Those jigsaw puzzles? Right, so if I asked you, John, it's an easy question, don't worry. Let's say you're working on a puzzle. Which pieces do you start with first and why?
Oh, you're starting with the borders first. They're the easiest ones to kind of lay out and start snapping together versus like the random blue sky.
Absolutely, so you're clearly an expert in this domain. I agree, right?
I also may have cheated and saw your video on it too, but...
Fair. You're a man who's done the homework, fair enough. But yes, so you're absolutely right.
How I do it.
Yeah, there you go. So here's the punchline. That makes sense, but we don't do that in communication. In communication, we do the opposite. Let's say in a presentation, I just noticed from your shirt, you're of a management consulting firm yourself. So what are you doing normally? Not you, but just in general. We're shoving a bunch of content, data points, slides, content. We get to the presentation, and what do? We ramble throughout the whole thing. And then the last slide sounds something like this. So thanks. Not the right way to approach it. So instead what you want to do is practice with the borders in mind. Start with the edges first. Practice the introduction of your speech 50 times. Do it until it's perfect. Don't even worry about the rest of the presentation and making it engaging. Just the first 50 times. Do the same thing with the conclusion. What's a great movie with a terrible ending? Last time I checked, terrible movie. Do the same thing with the conclusion 50 times. 50 times seems like a big number, John, but it actually isn't. Because your intro is like a minute or two. So it'll take you like 45 minutes to an hour to do this 50 times. And then tackle the middle. The reason that I'm able to answer questions so fluidly on a podcast, John, is not because I'm special. It's because when you get asked the same question 400 times, you're able to develop a better version for the answer. It's just most of us aren't willing to go through that monotonous repetition to serve more lives and to impact more people.
And this goes back to some other people that I kind of follow to try to get better. It's like, you got to do the boring stuff. Repeatedly do the boring stuff, and then you get – it's just right off the top of your head. What are your thoughts on using things like props or stuff like that to try to get some feedback as you're giving a presentation along? Because, again, go back to, I was in a wrong audience. I'll ask that question later when I showed up. And literally the guy was back with his head back and putting to sleep. And I wanted to like slam something on the desk just to, hey, wake up. I want to see that you're engaged. So do you encourage anything like props or anything like that?
For sure, man. You know, my perspective is never yes or no, because sometimes props work, sometimes they don't. Let's say you're talking to a bunch of bankers on Wall Street, financial services, maybe it doesn't make sense to bring like a plushie or something, throw it at them. But I think the key here is it's a principle. So what's the principle? What is the one idea that you want to share with them, and how do you get them to take action on it? And then the other piece, which is your content side, is what are the tools in your toolbox that you're going to test and try until you figure out what works, what is the most engaging? Let me use myself as an example, since I know my topic best. At the end of the day, on this podcast, John, like every other show I do, I only have one goal. And that goal is to convince somebody who's listening to this podcast that they can be an exceptional communicator too. So how does my goal, which I just gave away, influence every part of the message? Well, for one, I don't use very technical terms. I don't say glossophobia, which is, by the way, the medical term for the fear of communication. I don't talk about it. You don't see me mentioning the word glossophobia once on my Master Talk YouTube channel. Not even once, right?
That's twice here, though.
Right, that's twice here. Fair enough, touche. But the other piece is, what story can I tell to really get people excited? So I'll try 17 different things. Kind of like a stand-up comedian. We'll try 17 different jokes. Two of them are funny, and that's what goes in the Netflix special. Same thing with communication. But I found through years of doing this that the one story that always works all the time is the one about me speaking in a second language my whole life, which is true. I grew up in Montreal. Montreal, you need to know how to speak French. I grew up in a French education system. So not only was I scared of presenting, I had to present in a second language. The reason that's so engaging is because most of my audience, especially most of the people I end up working with, English is never the first language. They always have a South Asian background, an Asian background, an immigrant background. So for them, when they hear that story, it resonates. So they go, well, if Brendan can do it, I can do it too. But the key to your question, John, is you need to be willing to try 17 different things to keep your audience engaged, to figure out what is the one or two strategies that works for you. And then the last piece on that is the biggest mistake most of us make is we don't razor focus on one topic. We try and be half in on 17 topics. That's why we lose.
What about you talking about having the storytelling and making that engaging? One of the things that I had heard was you don't want to overwhelm an audience with like 100% new info, that you want to bake in a little bit of things that, like you said, they can relate to, but you're sprinkling in your ideas, your perspective on things. How do you find a balance with that as you're creating a presentation?
100%, John. So it always goes back on what the goal is, but let's say in the context of the work that I do, I'm strategic before I even jump on a podcast, before I even get on a presentation. Literally, let me explain in as granular details what I do. So as you can tell from the channel, there's hundreds of videos. I could talk about anything on a podcast, right? There's like millions of tips at this point. But what I need to do is a key word here, and the key word is prioritization. How do I prioritize the Rolodex of knowledge that I have in communication in a way that convinces people that they can A, master it, and two, that it's really easy? So I'm going to specifically choose knowledge sets in my content that will achieve that goal. So for example, you won't hear me on a podcast talking about my advanced strategies on vocal tonality. And the reason is because I know nobody's going to implement it. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to share the three easiest things. Like I see you just popped it up. So write my three daily public speaking exercises. I'll mention that because I'm looking at my data here and I'm noticing that that's what's getting me the most views. So I'm going to pull that tip and I'm going to make sure the random word exercise is talked about in a podcast. I'm going to make sure that sending video messages to your clients is an easy ROI and will help you practice communication on a consistent basis. I'm going to mention the question drill. Hey, you got to be more proactive with the questions you get asked in your life. So it's about strategically choosing the knowledge that you feel is super easy to implement, that is a no-brainer for people to take away, and deciding that in advance when you jump into the presentation.
That actually, that makes perfect sense on there, because that's something that when I've done things, it's like, hold on, what's, again, going back to knowing the audience, and speaking of that, what happens if you get in front of an audience and you realize, uh-oh, this is not what I was expecting it to be? How do you, have you had to have that experience of pivoting yourself, like, on the fly? Because that's an area that I've struggled with.
For sure. So it definitely happens less and less, because if you do the legwork of understanding the audience before it occurs, you'll actually avoid that. Let me give you a simple example. One presentation I gave to a Salesforce consultancy like a few weeks ago, I went an hour early, not to prepare my presentation. I want to meet the guys. I want to have lunch with them, because there's like a lunch before I presented. So I didn't get paid that extra hour. I just went to meet them so I can build a better rapport, understand who they are, and quickly change my energy in the presentation. And I'll give you the specifics. I realized really quickly when I got there that the team was a lot younger than I thought they were. I thought these Salesforce guys were like in their 40s and 50s, and I got there and they were 20. They were 22. So I had to change the tone of my presentation. I had an hour to do it, from super, super professional to very, very casual. But because I went early, I figured that out. But it's not hard for us to do that. If you're getting paid to do something, you should get on calls with your key audience members, get to know them, have dinner with them, literally have dinner with them, or lunch with them in my case, get to know them, and you'll outplay your industry any day.
Yeah, my experience with that was a Rotary Club, and I didn't realize that the quite frankly the average age was above 70. So my topic was not, and nobody was there. I was there early, but I was the only one there early. But I digress. So you're going through, you're building your skill set, you're getting better with your practice. How hard is it to make sure that you stay authentic to who you are, and you're not sitting there becoming what your coach wants you to be as far as just changing you as a person, but you're baking in your own personality into your communication style?
Right. So there's two parts to that. The first part to that, John, is the idea of what is objective versus what is subjective. So let's start with what is objective. What is 100% true, regardless of your communication style, you just need to do this. And there's three main things. The first one is the random word exercise. Doesn't matter if you're an introvert, an extrovert, an ambivert, or green, or blue, or yellow. It doesn't really matter. You got to do the random word exercise 100 times. Once a day, twice a day. It'll take you 2 minutes. Do this with your family. Do this with your friends. And you'll get better. Number two, question drills, right? We need to be more proactive. So instead of waiting for somebody to ask us a question about our businesses or expertise, what we do in life, we need to take a proactive approach. So every day for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, just reflect. What's one question that somebody's going to ask me in my management consulting business? What's one question somebody's going to ask me in communication coaching? What's a question that my family's going to ask me? And write out the answer. If you do that once a day for a year, John, you'll have answered 365 questions about your business. You'll be unbeatable with only five minutes of work. And then the third piece is simply this: video messages. I am shocked at how little service providers send video messages to their key accounts. That's what drives most of my business. I just send video messages to my clients. And it's not like a sales call. It's literally 20 seconds. Happy birthday, John. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a wonderful time with your holiday season with your family. And 10%, I always get referrals. Always, always, always. So I would start there. But now the question becomes that you ask, well, Brendan, how do I find my style? Well, as you communicate more, as you share more ideas, style can only be discovered with output. So once you do more output, you start to discover what type of communicator you are and what you aren't. So I'll give an example with me. If I were to summarize my communication skill in three sentences, it would be Gary Vaynerchuk's aggression and relatability. It would be Seth Godin's depth and ability to package existing ideas in ways that haven't been packaged before. And Scott Harrison, CEO of Charity Waters, mission, where if you speak, people's lives are on the line. I'll explain the third one. Scott Harrison is the CEO of a nonprofit, which means if he's there raising money and he screws up his presentation, people literally die. So there's a lot of high stakes. He needs to do well. He has no choice. Whereas us, if we don't get the sale, it doesn't matter. We just go to the next podcast. We go to the next sale. But Scott doesn't really have that much of a choice. So that's my style. So I reflect all three of those speakers. But you can't just intellectualize that, John. You need to actually be able to do output, and you discover more as you go.
How much do you think, talking about the presentation styles, you talked about video, you talked about sending the video messages to your clients. How much do you think is lost now that we've went to big time webinar meetings and online versus the in-person experience? Because the thing that I know, I'm a big time, and I see you are as well, I talk with my hands a lot when I do things. And I feel like if the camera's not right, there's that body language aspect that is also lost, which everything that I've read says 90% of communication is your expressions, your everything that's going on. How do you balance that out with in-person to this transition where a lot of things are happening on video?
Right. You know, the way I think about it, John, is communication is like juggling 18 balls at the same time. So one of those balls is smiling, one of them is vocal tone variety, one of them is filler words, and the list goes on and on. But the problem is that most of us try to juggle all 18 at once. Wrong approach. You want to do one ball at a time. So for those of you who are taking notes and you're going, wow, the random word exercise is great, the question drills, the video messages, you got to stop taking notes and start doing. You know, the best way to speak is to speak, right? That's how we get better. So be sure you're booking, right? 15 minutes in your calendar tomorrow. Am I doing the random word exercise for 5 minutes? Am I doing the video messages for 5 minutes? Am I doing the question drills for 5 minutes? That's what really moves the ball forward. And then going into video, what I love about communication is that it's a multiplier effect. So the more that we do video, the more we get comfortable doing video. So when I got started, just to paint a picture, John, I was a 22-year-old kid in my mother's basement with a phone and no money because I hadn't started working at IBM yet. So I literally had nothing. But I had energy, I had enthusiasm, and I had consistency. So I just kept doing it for a year. I don't care how bad the video was, I just kept doing it. Same thing with video messages. I would just send video messages. But after you do that 100, 200 times, you get really comfortable on video. But people are just not willing to do the reps, and that's why they're losing. Because they're overthinking.
That makes sense as far as you got to get the reps in. Where do you find for people to go get, besides just recording themselves, that to go actually go get some reps in? Go, where in the local community can you go regularly and say, I'm going to go present somewhere, short of going to be 5 minutes on a stand-up stage? And maybe that's the option, but
yeah, I definitely wouldn't recommend stand-up for most people. Even I haven't done stand-up yet. I'm starting to do it now just for fun to make myself better. Yeah, I would say the easiest thing to do is to find an accountability partner, just one person in your life. I like to use family as accountability. So people who have kids, I feel doing the random word exercise with your kids is probably the easiest thing to do for most people listening, because kids like doing it. They think it's a game, and they're better than you at it always because they don't think about the fear of judgment. They just do it, and you kind of get a little bit jealous, and that kind of forces you to do it more. So that's what I would say is make your own family your accountability system. And the other piece, if you just have a terrible family or something, then go to Toastmasters. I think that's easy. It's like $20 a month. And obviously the third level of accountability, if you can afford it, is hiring a coach for sure.
No, and it's funny you mentioned that. My neighbor's daughter is about to turn 3, and it's just no fear. I mean, there's no fear of walking up to a stranger and having a conversation. There's no fear just entering our house, which, you know, we have no problem with, but it's like, oh, you know, Emma's here. And just ordering you around. They will tell you the truth. I have definitely learned that, not having any kids, but having been around her quite a bit over the past year. So one of the things talking about this, and this is something else, this goes kind of circles back to something that I've had trouble with, but also with others, particularly when I facilitated and was a moderator and MC. Man, if you're live, man, people, you got to nail it the first time. You're good to go. But if you're pre-recording something, I have had some very, very painful experiences with, okay, we're on take 57 now, because you're pre-messaged, you've got a presentation and everything, they just can't give it. What is the difference in how to improve the you're good to go live, but man, it hit that record button and 3 hours later, your 10-minute presentation, you still haven't got it in the can.
Right. So let's start with the basics. Is what do we do before that camera turns on? That's really what I'm calling into question. What are we actually doing before that camera goes live? So let me give you an example with me, with my YouTube videos, because I think it's relatable. Is my videos are scripted word for word. They're written out, right? Fully. And then when I get to the set to film with my production team, I don't just, I don't use a teleprompter either. But what I do is, because I have my notes, my whole script, I look at the first paragraph, and then I do it. And then there's a take. Then I do the first one, there's a take. Second one, take, third take, and then close. And then I'm done. That's video. So there's two parts to that. One part is, what are we doing before we get to the set? So I would encourage people to write out their presentations if they're getting started on video, because it helps you structure your thoughts. And the second piece is, I recommend you practice 1 minute at a time. What does that mean? Start with the intro, like we talked about, the edges. Practice the intro. Practice the conclusion over and over again. Then 2nd minute of the presentation. 3rd minute, 4th minute, 5th minute, until you get your full 10. And then what's nice about video, which I love, you don't have to present all 10 minutes at once. You don't have to one take the video. You just have to present the first 2 minutes, and then you pause. Next 2 minutes, then you pause. Next 2 minutes, then you pause, and then you're done. So that's the way you got to do it. But I think the most important tip in everything I've shared, John, is you got to write it out, especially on video, because or else you're going to go all over the place and you'll keep taking and retaking.
Yeah, one of the things I know I personally did was, I've always been a fan more of the bullet points. I've never done the times that I've done the fully scripted out thing. I fell into the trouble of sounding like I'm reading from a script versus doing what you said. Hey, I've got the beginning at the end, practice that, and you kind of fill in. So that was kind of what I had fell back to, particularly if it was an area that you're very comfortable with. Obviously, like you with communication, you could probably just kind of run with a bunch of things. How big of a deal is it with filler words and things of that nature? Because I start eliminating those. And I know some of the random word exercises, I know when I did that with Toastmasters, the whole point of that was somebody was counting your filler words. And I've seen some really, really, really bad presentations or people that are very smart, and to the point where I stopped what I was doing and listened to the conference room going, that's awful. And everybody's eyes were glazed over. So part of being a little bit more polished, is it just, again, that repetition, but how do you start eliminating some of that stuff besides hitting the button in the script that says remove filler words, like I will at the end of this?
For sure, John. So the way that you do this is actually fairly simple. The first question we need to ask ourselves is, why do we say filler words? And the reason is super simple, because we forget what we want to say next. So let's say you ask me a question, I go, this is the answer. So that's why we say them. The next question to ask ourselves, so we do it to buy time essentially. So the next piece is, what do the top 1% communicators in our industry do differently? Because they're not smarter than us. They need time to think too. They're not just faster. There has to be some other reason. And the answer is super simple. They do take their time to think, except they don't use or ah to buy time. They just look at you directly in the eye and do this. Well, John, they pause. They actually just replace their filler word with nothing. And here's the secret that the best communicators on the planet never tell you, John, is that we can pause forever without ever making it feel awkward at all. So now the question becomes, how do you practice this? It's more fun in person, but since we're on a pod, I'll give it to you. So it's called the endless gaze. So what I do with my clients is I force them to stare into each other's eyes when we meet up in person for 3 minutes without saying a word. And especially with my married guys, it's funny because they've been married to their significant other for like 15 years. Like, I can't look at her in the eye, which is so funny. So I would encourage you to do that. Do that with somebody you love if you dare. But one thing I will say is if you can pause for 3 minutes, you could easily pause for 2 or 3 seconds in a podcast or a presentation.
No, that's awesome. I've used that trick when I'm trying to get the other person to divulge more information and we're just having a one-on-one. I will sit there and just not say anything because people don't like awkward silences on one-on-one conversations. So they will typically break that and just start spilling their guts on stuff that you're maybe hoping that they were going to divulge anyway if you were digging more information. But that's, again, another tangent. But how do you cognize it? Because that's one of the things talking about the filler words in the presentation. I'm cognizant of when I do it at this stage. I have not eliminated it. I don't know that anybody necessarily really can fully eliminate it from, you know, you've done 400 of these. I would imagine at some point you've done it. Maybe not. But it becomes a thing of being aware of it to start eliminating it. How do you become aware of that? Because like my mom will do it. I'll give you an example. My mom does it all the time. She has no clue she's doing it, though. I hear it.
Right, so the awareness starts by just acknowledging it, right? So it starts with the question, how would my life change if I was an exceptional communicator? So we need to want that goal for ourselves. Because every goal, and that's the missing link, John, every goal that we have in our life is linked to communication. It doesn't matter if it's financial, health-related, relationship-related. If we want an amazing relationship with our spouse, communication plays a significant role in that. If we want a great health, we need to be able to communicate our family's expectations. Hey, I can't eat fried food for dinner. Hey, I need to talk with my personal trainer. They need to know my allergies. They need to know my diet constraints. You need to be able to communicate. If you want to become a massive CEO of a company, you need to communicate like one. Because you're going to be managing hundreds of employees, or if you're a vice president at a company, tens of employees, and you have to lead them with communication. So we need to start the conversation there. Do we even want to get better? There needs to be a reason internally within us. That's one part. The other part is the awareness is simple. Somebody else has to tell you. And it doesn't need to be a coach always. You need to go up to the person. I think you said it was your mom or your grandmother. I don't remember which
one. It was my mom, yeah.
Your mom. You have to go up to your mom and say, yo, like you're saying filler words. And she'll give you one or two responses. Either she'll say, who cares? And that's fine because most people don't care about getting better at it. No offense to your mom, obviously. And then, or the second response, which is equally great, is, oh, John, nobody told me. Thanks for telling me. I'll work on it. What do I do? And then you go do what Brendan told you to do on the podcast, and then you just do that. So yeah,
it will definitely be the first answer with her.
There you go. So, and that's fine, right?
I've got pretty much two things I want to talk about left. We live in pretty much a pretty polarized society, and I listened to one of your presentations where you talked about being open to new perspectives, particularly you're meeting new people and you're trying to engage in a conversation or give them a presentation, again going back to maybe it's not exactly the ideal audience or it's a different audience than what you typically do, but you know you may get resistance. How do you not turn those types of efforts into combative experiences if you start recognizing that you're getting pushback to either stop, press forward, or shift gears?
Great question, John. So it starts with the relationships we actually care about first. So we need to start there. I would argue we shouldn't start with the worst client in our business, which is a different story for another. You should just fire that person. But I would say the key is more, it begins with, what is the relationship that we want to work on the most? Let me give you a personal example. Me and my mom used to fight all the time. All the time, right? She was born and raised in a country called Sri Lanka, which is south of India. And when she came here, she has a different set of values than I do. And by values, I mean cultural differences. So I remember when I was 10 once, and she said, hey, you can't go eat at your friend's house. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what does that even mean? Like, why can't I go eat at my friend's house? So we would always bicker all the time. But when I was 15, John, I asked myself a very important question. Not what is my relationship currently with my mom, but versus what do I want that relationship to be? I call this relationship visioning. What is the relationship vision? Do you want your relationship with that to be like that always? No. I want it to be peaceful. So now, because I want that relationship to be better, because I have the incentive for it, so start where you are. Don't start with the people you don't like. Start with the people you actually do like, and repair those first. So I sat her down one day, and I just asked herself the question that very few Indian sons ask their mothers, which is, Mom, why? Why does it bother you? Instead of just yelling at her and saying, Mom, I'm going to go eat there regardless of what you say. I just sat her down once, and I was like, so, Mom, what's up? And I just listened to her for 30 minutes, and I realized that her justification made perfect sense. And the reason was super simple. When she was in Sri Lanka, there was a massive civil war. She learned not to trust people. All of their doors were locked. You would even go to people's house. Forget about eating there. So I listened to her for 30 minutes, and I just said something really simple. After listening, Mom, we don't live there anymore. We live in Canada now. You don't have that problem anymore. And then she just looked at me and said, okay. And then I got to eat at my friend's house. So what's the point that I want to drive with this stupid example is there are relationships in our life that we do care about, but we're not actually investing. We're not holding ourselves accountable to this. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, John. I'm a workaholic. I love working. I should be spending more time with my mom. That's why I live with her, by the way, so I can see her every day. But the point that I'm driving here is there's areas of improvement for all of us. So start with those relationships first. Don't even worry about the Democrat if you're a Republican or the Republican if you're a Democrat. Don't even worry about that. Start with the relationships you actually care about improving. Focus on those, and that will give you the warm-up exercise to deal with everyone else in the world.
Awesome. No, it makes sense, and that's just something that you see all the time because there's people you're talking cancel culture, you're talking just, am I going to say something? Something you're going to say is going to piss somebody else off, and it's just being able to navigate it, avoid it, you know, just ignore it, and move on with life. That's kind of mine. But wrap up with this. Do you have like your greatest success story with a client where somebody was just petrified, they jumped at their own reflection in the mirror to now just being a masterful presenter, keynote speaker, and just tons of success? Do you got like that key example? And I think the system just froze.
Yeah, the system just froze something. But I got the question, so you're good. The success story, right? That's what you're asking?
Yeah,
you got it. So yeah, man, I mean, I'm super grateful in my career. I've coached a lot of amazing people. I would say the one that stands out to me most is goes back to my mission, right? I think the next Elon Musk is a 7-year-old girl who can't afford a communication coach. So for me, the person that drives me the most, the person who gets me excited, is the 35-year-old, the 25-year-old who has that potential and is just missing communication to really change their life. So for me, it would be Ali, right? Huerta, who's the CEO of AIM Colors. Amazing technology company that she's built. She basically does nail polish for women. But what's different about her nail polish is that it's technology clip-on nails. So instead of having to redo your nail polish, basically what she does is you put these nails on and you can use your phone to just change the colors, which is pretty wild.
Cool. Right? I have to tell my wife about that.
Yeah, so she's super smart. They're probably still in development, but yes, we'll definitely tell your wife about it in like 12 months or something. But the idea is, so she's super smart, right? PhD in organic chemistry, like super deep tech, very, very bright, but nervous to communicate her ideas to when she's raising money from investors, all that stuff. So making her an exceptional communicator is like such a gift for me, because you like one day she's just like, I don't know if I could do this communication thing. And another day she's speaking on a stage at Collision Toronto, which is a massive startup competition and conference. And she made top 12, and she's the most early stage company out of the 12. Most of those guys already raised millions of dollars. So seeing that transformation is what really makes me wake up every day and serve also the people who can't afford me, right, through Master Talk, the YouTube channel. So it's awesome.
No, that's awesome. Man, I really appreciate the time. What's the best way for people to reach out? Obviously, you got the YouTube channel. I have all the links in the show notes, but if somebody wants to hit you up directly.
For sure, John. Such a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. So two easy ways to keep in touch. The first one is definitely the YouTube channel, Bastard Talk. And the second way is I do a free live workshop that's interactive over Zoom on communication. I do that every 3 weeks. It's fun. It's live. It's interactive. It's not boring. And I facilitate it. So if you want to come to that, you can register for it at rockstarcommunicator.com.
Awesome. Brendan, appreciate it.
Likewise, brother.